content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Will L-lysine prevent Alzheimer's disease? Question. Whenever I feel a cold sore coming on, the telltale tingly feeling, I take L-lysine tablets. When I take 1,000 milligrams a day, often the cold sore will never develop. If I got a head start, it disappears several days sooner than it would otherwise. I read your article about herpes and cold sores being linked to Alzheimer's disease. Is there anything that in L-lysine, excuse me, that could be helpful in preventing dementia? I'm going to start taking it every day, maybe 500 milligrams a day. Answer. There are a few well-controlled long-term studies of using amino acid L-lysine to prevent or treat cold sores, HSV-1, or herpes labialis. A review in the Dermatology Journal Cutis, July 2005, concluded that L-lysine benefits are unclear. It might help prevent recurrences in selected patients. That said, many readers report success like yours. There is growing evidence to suggest a link between herpes infection and the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. The journal Frontiers in Genetics, September 10, 2018. A study from Taiwan found that people taking antiviral medicines for herpes were significantly less likely to develop dementia, and that's cited in Neurotherapeutics, April 2018. Whether L-lysine would be beneficial remains to be determined. Question. I've read in your column that grape juice and pectin may help relieve arthritis pain. I would like to try it, but I have diabetes. Grape juice has a lot of sugar. Does any lower sugar liquid seem to work? Answer. Other readers also have shared your concern about the sugar in grape juice. One recommended low-sugar grape juice. Others have suggested pomegranate juice or tart cherry juice as alternatives. Neither is low in sugar, but they do have fewer calories than Concord grape juice. You may be interested in other arthritis remedies that are less likely to affect your blood sugar. They include unflavored Knox, K-N-O-X, gelatin, bromelain, boswellia, curcumin, ginger, ashwagandha, and stinging nettle. You can learn more about these options in our book, Alternatives for Arthritis. Can testosterone cream help women? Question. After a friend told me that she had great success with testosterone cream, I asked my gynecologist about it. She prescribed a low-dose cream, and I've been using it for years. I am happy with the results. I have more energy, better mood, a high sex drive, amazing orgasms, and less body fat. My husband is happy because I'm happy, and our sex life is great. Why don't more women know about this? The Food and Drug Administration has not approved testosterone for women. The only way to get this topical medicine is with a prescription at a compounding pharmacy. As oral medicine, Estratest once was prescribed to treat symptoms of menopause. This is now only found as a generic pill, esterified estrogens with methyl testosterone. Like other estrogen replacement pills, it carries a black box warning about endometrial cancer and cardiovascular complications. Question. I'm 34 years old and drive a truck commercially for a living. The Department of Transportation requires us to have regular physicals. My blood pressure, 145 to 155 over 80 to 85, has caused the doctors concern. They all urge me to lose weight, lower my salt intake, and exercise regularly. I lost 90 pounds and now eat 1,700 milligrams or less of sodium a day. I ride a stationary bike for 30 to 60 minutes every day and have a resting pulse of about 55 beats per minute. My blood pressure is 145 over 78 at this very moment, even after living this lifestyle for 2 years. This is just who I am. Answer, congratulations. Losing weight and exercising regularly are among the most important steps you can take for good health. Guidelines for physicians encourage people with blood pressure higher than 130 over 80 to implement lifestyle measures like yours. If that doesn't work to lower blood pressure, doctors are supposed to prescribe antihypertensive drugs. A new study, however, calls that advice into question, and that's cited in JAMA Internal Medicine, October 29, 2018. British researchers reviewed the records of over 38,000 people with untreated blood pressure between 140 over 90 and 159 over 99. Half of these individuals were prescribed medications while the other half were not. At the end of 6 years of follow-up, there was no difference in the rates of heart attack, stroke, or death. Coca-Cola might help when food gets stuck. Question. During a meal at home, I tried to swallow a piece of stew meat that was a little too large. It lodged in my esophagus about halfway down and would not budge. It didn't impair my breathing, so I wasn't choking, but it definitely was a problem. My son went online and found a suggestion that could be a lifesaver. Take a drink of ice-cold Coca-Cola to move the obstruction. I did so, and the meat moved instantly with no more problems. I thought you might like to know about this. Answer. Your story intrigued us. We went searching the medical literature for confirmation and were surprised to discover that this remedy has been utilized by healthcare practitioners for decades. Cited in the Annals of the Royal College of Surgeons of England, March 1993, Norwegian gastroenterologist studied 100 patients who had gotten food stuck in their food tubes, cited in Gastroenterology Research and Practice Online, November 18, 2013. They concluded the treatment of choice of impacted food in the esophagus is endoscopic removal. In cases where this is difficult, we recommend treatment with Coca-Cola and Creon, C-R-E-O-N, for 2 to 3 days before complications can occur. Creon is pancreatic enzymes that help digest food. Question. I've taken statins for high cholesterol, but I have horrible side effects. Red yeast rice doesn't work for me. I eat oatmeal for breakfast and before bed with cinnamon, flaxseed, and lecithin. I also take 12 flaxseed oil capsules daily and eat a low-fat diet. My 2 daily tablespoons of olive oil push my HDL over 60, but no matter what I do, I can't get my cholesterol below 279. Any other ideas? Answer. One approach you might add to your regimen is psyllium. This soluble fiber found in Metamucil, Consyl, K-O-N-S-Y-L, and certain other bulk-forming laxatives can lower LDL cholesterol effectively. Cited in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition online, September 15, 2018. You may find that adding nuts to your low-fat diet can also be helpful. Also consider adding some grape or pomegranate juice and possibly even red grapefruit. You can learn more about such options in our guide to cholesterol control and heart health. Concern Viagra could lead to vision loss. Question. I am concerned about the possibility that Viagra for erectile dysfunction might affect vision. I have read about this, but I have not been able to get my doctor or pharmacist to tell me how often vision loss occurs and whether it is temporary or permanent. I'd like to use the drug, but I don't want to risk my sight. Do you have any more information? Answer. The Food and Drug Administration warns physicians to alert their patients to a rare but serious vision problem. Non-arteritic anterior ischemic optic neuropathy, which is abbreviated NAION, has been linked to drugs like Viagra and Cialis. Any loss in vision should be reported immediately. Less serious vision problems include temporary blurred vision, increased light sensitivity, and a bluish tinge to vision. These reactions usually are reversible. Question. I have a question about Ambien. I took it and ended up sleepwalking. In fact, I was driving my car and was slapped with a DUI citation. I don't remember a thing. Can you help me? Answer. Sleepwalking, sleep eating, and even sleep driving are potential hazards of taking Ambien. We have heard from other readers who have gotten into accidents while sleep driving because of Ambien. Legal cases involving sleep-related complex behaviors such as sleepwalking and sleep driving have been brought before courts, but the legal decisions have been inconsistent, cited in Journal of the American Academy of Psychiatry and the Law, 2011, and Journal of Law and Medicine, 2016. For people who would prefer to avoid such sleeping pills, we offer a number of alternatives in our e-guide to getting a good night's sleep. This online resource provides information on popular sleep aids and natural approaches to overcoming insomnia. It is available at www.peoplespharmacy.com. Question. My father was gassed in World War I and had chronic bronchitis as a result. Veterans Affairs prescribed terpin, T-E-R-P-I-N, hydrate with codeine. It really helped him and us kids when we had a cough. One probably can't get it with codeine in today's environment. Answer. Terpin hydrate is no longer available as the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, decided that there wasn't enough evidence of effectiveness. Codeine used to be available without a prescription in over-the-counter cough medicine, but most states now restrict it to prescription status. The myths of microfighting. Turns out that many of the things we do to keep our, and this is from the Wall Street Journal, turns out that many of the things we do to keep ourselves safe from harmful bacteria just make the problem worse. Here's a germaphobe alert. There are likely more bacteria cells in and on you right now, 39 trillion on average, than there are actual human cells, around 30 trillion. Most of them are harmless or even good for you, but some are pernicious. One in six Americans, for instance, comes down with an illness from foodborne microorganisms each year, according to the Centers for Disease Control. So how do we avoid the harmful bacteria? There are some basic rules to observe. Wash your hands frequently when touching surfaces and before handling or eating food. Cook food to proper temperatures and store leftovers properly. But as specialists in food science and food microbiology, respectively, we've also spent some years exploding myths about what is and isn't safe and highlighting some unexpected risks. Here are a few examples. The 5-second rule. Many people believe that a piece of food dropped on the floor is safe to eat if you pick it up quickly enough. The idea is that bacteria don't have time to transfer in under 5 seconds, but that's plenty of time for nasty bacteria to leap onto a piece of food. We tested the 5-second rule in our laboratory at Clemson University by dropping bologna and bread on surfaces contaminated with salmonella. We recovered between 100,000 and 10 million bacteria after 5 seconds, depending on the surface, as we reported in 2006 in the Journal of Applied Biology. Admittedly, waiting 60 seconds is worse, about 10 times worse, in our research, but 5 seconds is bad enough. Ice cubes and lemon juice. Many of us think that the ice in our drinks is safe and that the acid from a lemon slice dropped in a beverage reduces any contaminating microorganisms, but both can carry potentially harmful pathogens themselves. A 2007 study by two clinical microbiologists published in the Journal of Environmental Health found that 70% of lemon slices from the rims of glasses in restaurants produced microbial growth. 25 different microbial species were found on the samples. In our own study, published last year in the Journal of Food Research, we found that 60% and 80% of the E. coli bacteria that we introduced onto hands and scoops, respectively, were transferred to a drink via ice cubes. For lemons, an average of 6,000 E. coli were transferred to wet lemons touched by our participants' hands, and then They multiplied, a six-fold increase over 24 hours at room temperature. Restaurant hazards. Food and drink aren't the only risks to your health when you're eating out. A study published in the Journal of Environmental Health in 2013 by U.S. and South Korean researchers found that salmonella and E. coli can survive for up to 72 hours on laminated plastic menus. On paper menus, the strains lasted only 6 hours. We checked this ourselves by inoculating plastic menus with a fluorescent E. coli strain and then asking participants to handle the menus for 1 minute as if they were ordering food. About 11% of the bacterial cells, or an average of 3 million, were transferred to hands. Knowing this, you might want to keep a bottle of hand sanitizer ready for the next time you dine out. But then again, the next point, hand sanitizers. How many of us carry around a small bottle of hand sanitizer just in case? Unfortunately, they are not as effective as a thorough hand washing regimen. A sanitizer advertising that it removes 99% of the microbe population can still leave thousands of viable organisms per square inch depending on the initial population. And that's only for the specific types of organisms the products are designed to kill, not for all of the ones you encounter in real life. To get U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval for the antimicrobial agents used in hand sanitizers, manufacturers test them against only a select number of bacteria, not including E. coli and salmonella. Hand dryers. If you use soap and water instead, you may then dry your hands with a hot air hand dryer in the restaurant restroom. These dryers are actually blowing bacteria around. Bioaerosols are generated in restrooms with every flush of the toilet, and then hand dryers circulate the water droplets around the room. A 1993 study at the University of Westminster in the United Kingdom found that electric hand dryers increase bacteria on hands after washing by fivefold, while paper towels decrease bacteria by 42%. Subsequent studies have a wide range of results, but have confirmed that air dryers spread bacteria. Another Westminster study in 2015 found that today's jet air dryers spread bacteria twice as far, 6 feet on average, as older air dryers. In our own test in 2016 around the city of Clemson and our campus, we found that gas station hand dryers were a little cleaner than college dormitory hand dryers, but those in grocery store bathrooms circulated 9 times more bacteria than the other two. You can't even try to avoid most of the bacteria that's floating around us all the time. Even when you blow out birthday candles at your party, you spread up to 37,000 more bacteria onto the cake than it had before the guest sang happy birthday. We know because we tested that too. Which leads our final piece of advice. Try not to think too much about those trillions of bacteria swirling around you. This essay is adapted from the author's new book, Did You Just Eat That? Two scientists explored double dipping, the 5-second rule, and other food myths in the lab, published by W.W. Norton. And the authors are Paul Dawson and Brian Sheldon. New peanut allergy drug could herald sea change in treating food allergies. And this is by Carolyn Johnson from the Washington Post. A large study provides the strongest evidence that children and teenagers can be desensitized to peanut allergies through controlled escalating exposure to a substance that could otherwise trigger a life-threatening reaction, an advance that specialists said was likely to herald the development of new food allergy drugs. After a year of treatment with an experimental drug made by Aimmune Therapeutics, 67% of children and teenagers with peanut allergies were able to safely ingest the equivalent of at least 2 peanuts, compared with just 4% of those on a placebo, according to the study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. But that improvement came at a cost. Nearly all of the study participants who received the drug a pharmaceutical-grade preparation of peanut flour, suffered adverse events of some type, and 1 in 10 withdrew from the trial due to gastrointestinal, skin, or respiratory problems, or systemic allergic reactions. For years, smaller studies have suggested that exposure to escalating amounts of peanut allergen could desensitize people to the potentially life-threatening effects of exposure, which can include anaphylactic shock. But several outside experts said that the large systematic study of 550 people could lead to the first treatment approved by the Food and Drug Administration. The majority of the participants were between ages 4 and 17, the group in which researchers found the drug to be effective. I think that we're looking at going from right now, where there's no approved treatment for food allergy, to a landscape where probably in a few years we'll have a couple of options to offer our patients, said Corrine Keat, a pediatric allergist at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, not involved in the study, and who said that that would amount to a sea change, SEA, quote unquote, sea change, given the dearth of options today. In the short term, the products that may come to market are not cures, but I think there are a number of different approaches being explored, and overall, the goal is more of a curative treatment. Aimmune, which funded the study, plans to submit an application for the drug to federal regulators next month and anticipates it could launch late in 2019. It is unclear how much it would cost, how long patients would have to take it, and whether it would be covered by insurance. For now, the advice will be for ongoing treatment, said Wayne Schreffler, director of the Food Allergy Center at Massachusetts General Hospital and one of the study authors who has received trial funding and fees from Aimmune. Further studies will be needed to address whether, after some years, some people can alter regular dosing. The large majority of the study participants tolerated the treatment, and I expect the same will be true of its use in the real world when and if it's approved. The treatment is not a cure, and the regimen may not appeal to everyone with food allergies. Patients came to a clinic every 2 weeks to have their dose gradually increased under supervision over a period of 6 months. They also took the drug at home daily. I think it's important to remember what the goal of the treatment is. The goal is not to allow people to freely eat peanuts, said Daniel Edelman, the chief medical officer of Aimmune. Kids go out the door every morning and their parents worry. This is the day they'll be exposed to peanuts and potentially have a life-threatening reaction. The goal of this treatment is to help protect people from those potentially life-threatening reactions. Aimmune will expand the approach to other food allergies, testing whether a similar drug could work to desensitize children to egg allergies next year. Experts warn that this kind of regimen should not be started at home. There are an estimated 6 million children with food allergies in the United States. In an accompanying editorial, Michael Perkin from the Population Health Research Institute at St. George's University of London pointed out that the potential market for a therapy is billions of dollars. The Aimmune drug was a defatted peanut flour made through the rigorous manufacturing processes required of pharmaceutical products, which Edelman emphasized meant it was free from variability that can carry the danger of delivering the wrong dose. For Your Health from the Costco Connection. Know your type, identifying and managing different types of diabetes. November is National Diabetes Month. More than 100 million American adults live with diabetes or pre-diabetes, according to a 2017 report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The survey found that more than 30 million Americans have diabetes, while another 84.1 million have prediabetes, a condition that, if left untreated, often leads to type 2 diabetes within 5 years. While the cause of diabetes varies by type, all forms of the disease lead to excess sugar or glucose in the blood, which can create serious health problems, including nerve damage and cardiovascular disease. Usually the excess sugar in the blood is caused by some problem with insulin, a hormone made by the beta cells in the pancreas that regulates glucose. Either the body is making insufficient insulin, or the body is somewhat resistant to insulin. Any elevation in blood sugar challenges your body and increases the risk of cardiovascular events like heart attacks or strokes, says Margaret Eckert Norton, an associate professor of nursing at St. Joseph's College in New York. Diabetes types. There are several types of diabetes. Prediabetes. Prediabetes signals that the body is having trouble metabolizing glucose. 1 in 4 people have prediabetes and don't know it, says Dr. Samar Hafida, staff endocrinologist at the Joslin Diabetes Center and an instructor at Harvard Medical School. Treatment at this stage with healthy eating and physical activities may prevent diabetes, prediabetes, from progressing to type 2. If diet and exercise don't do the trick, metformin, an anti-diabetic medication, may be added to the plan. Gestational diabetes. Hormonal changes during pregnancy can promote insulin resistance, causing blood glucose to rise higher than normal. This condition usually disappears once the baby is delivered. Type 1. Type 1 diabetes affects children through adolescence and is associated with the body not being able to make any insulin. Some sort of autoimmune process destroys the beta cells in the pancreas that ordinarily produces insulin. The only treatment for type 1 diabetes is taking insulin throughout life. Latent autoimmune diabetes in adults. LADA, sometimes referred to as diabetes 1.5, can occur at any age. People with LADA eventually stop producing insulin, but the progression is slower than in people with type 1. Eventually, they too will need insulin. Type 2. People with type 2 diabetes make insulin, but their bodies do not use insulin well. There are a number of risk factors, chief among them obesity, a sedentary lifestyle, and a family history. Over time, the body pumps more insulin into the bloodstream. The beta cells in people with type 2 diabetes may burn out, and these people may have to depend on insulin for treatment. And their treatment options, so be sure to review that, and I will review that on our next broadcast. Because we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. So be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it, and I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program was intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.